Bhagavatam, 8th canto, chapter 7, Lord Shiva saves the universe, text 36.
Sisuku uvacha, tadvriksha vasanam tasam. Tadvriksha vasanam tasham. Kripaya brishapidita. Kripaya brishapidita. Savabhuta surideva. Savabhuta surideva. Idam aha satimpriyam. Idam aha satim priyam.
Translation. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Shiva is always benevolent towards all living entities. When he saw that the living entities were very much disturbed by the poison, which was spreading everywhere, he was very compassionate. Thus he spoke to his eternal consort, Sati, as follows. Lord Shiva said, My dear Bhavani, just see how all these living entities have been placed in danger because of the poison produced from the churning of the ocean of milk. It is my duty to give protection and safety to all living entities suffering for existence. Certainly, it is the duty of the master to protect his suffering dependents. People in general, being bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are always engaged in animosity towards one another. But devotees, even at the risk of their own temporary lives, try to save them. Purport, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. This is the characteristic of a Vaishnava. Paradukha dukhi. A Vaishnava is always unhappy to see the conditioned souls unhappy. Otherwise, he would have no business teaching them how to become happy. In materialistic life, people must certainly engage in activities of animosity. Materialistic life is therefore compared to samsara davanala, a blazing forest fire that automatically takes place. Lord Shiva and his followers in the parampara system tried to save people from this dangerous condition of materialistic life. This is the duty of devotees following the principles of Lord Shiva and belonging to the Rudra Sampradaya. There are four Vaishnava Sampradayas, and the Rudra Sampradaya is one of them because Lord Shiva, Rudra, is the best of the Vaishnavas, Vaishnava Yatastambhu. Indeed, as we shall see, Lord Shiva drank all the poison for the benefit of humanity. So, in this purport, the first line is very nice. The symptom of a Vaishnava. The symptom of a Vaishnava is the, you must have good hearing over there, is that a Vaishnava is only concerned with the welfare of everyone else. Paradukha dukhi. And this, in the translation, it's stated that a devotee will even risk his own temporary life for this. So we see so many examples, Haridas Thakur, Lord Jesus Christ, and so many great saints who are prepared to lay down their lives for the benefit of humanity. So there's a nice book by Satsrup Maharaj called Distribute Books, Distribute Books, Distribute Books. And we're now in the Christmas marathon, so a very relevant book to the December period. In there it states, the first thing Satsrup Maharaj states is that Lord Krishna, or Lord Brahma, should we say, was in complete illusion. And he was wondering what to do. He didn't know what to do. But suddenly he heard these words. Does anyone know the two syllables he heard? Apart from you. Anyone else know? Tapa. So he realized he should engage in austerities. So like us, you know, he got up early in the morning. He put on his tilak. He went to Mangalati. No, he didn't. He performed austerities. And for many, many years, he performed austerities. And then within his heart, the information of the creation was given. So, from Krishna's flute, from his Venu, this information was given. So, this transcendental transference of knowledge was given first by Lord Krishna to Lord Brahma, and he created the whole universe. So this is how that book, distribute book, distribute book, distribute book, starts very nicely. So this is actually the the source of book distribution, this mood of Krishna giving to Lord Brahma all this information. So in the same way, the devotees, and Srila Prabhupada in particular, stressed this book distribution as a means to deliver this mercy to the whole world. Distribute books, distribute books, distribute books. If the books just go into their hand, they will be benefited. What to speak if they read them? If they read just one word, Prabhupada said. So this is Paradulka Dukhi. This is the highest welfare work. What will your 1 minute lecture do? But if you give them one of my books, this will change their lives. These books are like bombs. You place them. Everyone knows what a time bomb is. They have a clock on it, and in 36 minutes it blows up. So these books are like time bombs. We don't know. We did a survey actually in the UK to find out who was reading books. We distribute so many books, and who's reading them. So everyone's heard of Gallup poll. Anyway, it's one surveying. So we used this Gallup poll, and we investigated how the people read the books. Because some devotees were wondering, are the books getting read? You know, we're distributing so many books, do people actually read them? Because in the West, people don't read, per se. You know, a magazine maybe is the most, or a newspaper, but books, they don't read. So we were wondering. So we made this survey, and we discovered that the person we give the books to, generally, they don't read the books. They don't. So everyone was very disappointed. No one's reading Prabhupada's books. We're giving out so many books. But then they found out that actually, on average, four people read the books, but it's not the person we give them to. They put them in their bookshelf because they're nice books. And then someone else says, oh, can I borrow this book? In fact, many devotees in the UK got books from charity stores. Do you have charity stores here? No. You know what charity stores is. Anyway, in the West, I'm not sure about America, but in the UK, they have all these charity shops. And it's everyone's discarded stuff, like Kali Yuga present. You know when someone gives you something that they don't really want? You call it a Kali Yuga present? It's, okay, thank you. So they have all their nice clothes, especially in the rich areas. So they go to the local charity shop and they donate them free. And then the charity shop, they get this article of clothing, or sometimes electrical tape recorder, something. And they resell. You've seen, huh? Yeah. So many, many devotees have got books, Srila Prabhupada's books. A book is normally £2. By paying 20 pence or 10 pence for a book in a charity shop. And I remember when I became interested, I went deliberately to charity shops to find Prabhupada's books, because the devotees were selling me for £5, £10. So I made a survey of the charity shops, and I was buying for 10 pence, 20 pence, because I am a creeper and I can't. So I was purchasing for very small price. So the point is that these books, they're like time bombs. They go out, and then on average, other people read the books. So this book distribution, as Prabhupada put so much emphasis on, and this month is the month of book distribution, particularly, we focus on. We have to have faith that actually these books will go into the right hands at the right time to the right person. These books are none different from the Supreme Lord. So he's not a blade of grass moves without his sanction. So if we just have faith to deliver this message, what can we say? But we give Srila Prabhupada's books. I think we've all experienced when we read Prabhupada's books, that it was like every question that came up. Like, I wasn't familiar at all with Vedic culture at all. But when I read Prabhupada's books, it was like every statement he made, the next statement, I came up with an inquiry in my mind, a question. And the next statement, he answered the question. It was almost like having someone sitting in front of you that you could just ask a question to and it'd answer. So this book distribution is the essence of our philosophy produced in one book. So this book distribution is what we focus on in this month and is the means of delivering this Paradulka Dukhi. So the beginning of that book, distribute books, distribute books, distribute books, was explaining how Lord Krishna disseminated this knowledge, and how we can do the same thing. We can disseminate this information for people, for population at large. So, in that vein, the Acharya's mood to liberate the conditioned souls are there, and we see in the lives of the Acharyas. I can think of a story about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, how he started the Gaudiya Math. Many of you know how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj started the Gaudiya Math. They know the story. So there was one friend of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that this Bimal Prasad, this devotee, this Bhaktisiddhanta, he will spread the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. Well, he will spread Srila Prabhupada, spread it all over the world. Bhaktisiddhanta will take this message and he will spread it. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur died, left his body, and this friend of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's was wondering where Bimal Prasad was. So he went looking, because he was nowhere around. He couldn't find him. And he's saying, this mission of Lord Chaitanya has to spread, and it's him that's going to spread. He's a rare Vishnu. He's the one that's going to spread this message. So where is he? So he went to Navadvip to look for him, because he heard he was in Navadvip chanting, doing some bhajan. So he went looking, and he couldn't find him anywhere. So he asked some of the local people, do you know this Bimal Prasad, where this devotee is? So they said, no, we don't know, but there's one madman who was running, jumping in the Ganga, and he's Pagal, he's mad. He uses one lota, one for bathing, one for passing. He's mad, he's just chanting all the time. So the man thought, yes, this is Bimal Prasad. So he went looking. So he found him, and he said, your father has asked you to take on this propagation of Lord Chaitanya's mission. You must do. You're the person who has been chosen to do this. So he said, to spread the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Panchatattva are here. They're dancing in front of me. You can't see them? So the man realized that he was in a very elevated state of consciousness, completely absorbed in his bhajan. And he thought, well, nothing's going to happen. He's so absorbed in his bhajan, he's not going to spread the movement. So he left. He actually sat down on the banks of the Ganges, and I think you face east when you want to leave your body. So he decided that that was it. The movement wasn't going to be spread. So he very disappointedly went home. So then that was in the morning. Then at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, this big tall sannyasi with the danda appeared, shaven headed, in sannyas vesh, with a danda, came in and said, "I am Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. You must immediately make the paperwork to start this Gaudiya Math." So that's how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta started the Gaudiya Math. That was spoken by Atmatattva Das, telling the story. So nice. So in that mood, although he was engaged in bhajan, he decided to come out of his bhajan to spread paradukaduki, this mission. So this is the mood of the Vaishnavas, and there's also one nice story that he tells as well about how Srila Prabhupada, anyway, many stories, but one is nice, that Srila Prabhupada was in one city, I can't remember the name, Lalabad or somewhere in India, and he was with one of his godbrothers, and they were discussing, and the godbrother was a Sanskrit scholar, and he was looking at the writings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and so many other writings, and he was saying how this prediction is made by Lord Chaitanya. Nada Adigram, every village, my name will be heard. So he was saying to Abai Babu, to Srila Prabhupada, how is this possible that Lord Chaitanya's name will be spread to every town and village in the world? How is it possible? So Srila Prabhupada said, you doubting the words of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? He said, no, I'm not doubting, but I'm doubting, but I'm not doubting. But how is it going to happen? So Srila Prabhupada said, it will happen. Actually, there's a prelim to this story. Big Bhagwat, you know Big Bhagwat in America? One devotee, Prabhupada disciple. He was walking down the road in the same city. And he was going to make a life member. So he was very determined, you know, I'm going to make a life member. And so he was in dhoti, tilak, neck beads. So he walked down the street and this little man came up to him and started pulling on his dhoti. And he said, hey, what are you doing? You're a gora. You have dhoti, kunti mala, tilak. You're Vaishnava. So Big Bhagwat said, yes, I have a guru. And he came to the West and he preached. He said, who is your guru? He said, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And so the man said, who? I've never heard of this person. So Big Bhagwat, just trying to get rid of him, I have an appointment with a big man to make life member, to make some money. Just if you, so he gave him a Back to Godhead magazine. Take this, Back to Godhead magazine. So on the back was Srila Prabhupada's picture in his sannyas fashion. And the man said, Abai Babu, you did it, you did it. And he started crying and being very appreciative. And so Big Bhagwat said, you know him? He said, yes, I know him. He's my godbrother. I'm a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. And then Bhagwat paid his obeisances, and he paid his obeisances. And they went home. He took prasadam, and he told him this story about how he was a Sanskrit scholar in this city and how Prabhupada had told him that, yes, you should have faith in the words of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This will happen. So then they were discussing like that. And then Prabhupada went upstairs, and he turned around to this godbrother and said, yes, it will happen, but you will not do it. So this man was thinking, he's implying that he's going to do it. He's a householder. He's just interested in money. He's taking trains here to make money for pharmaceuticals. He's very religious, very pious, but it's just... So then when he saw this picture of Srila Prabhupada, he didn't know Prabhupada had taken sannyas. He didn't know Prabhupada had gone to the West. He didn't know Prabhupada had made disciples. He didn't know Prabhupada had done all these things. So his first realization that Krishna consciousness spread all over the world was this picture in the back of the Back to Godhead. That Prabhupada, he did it. So his first reaction was, Abai Babu, you did it, you did it. So in this way, this paradukha dukhi, we see with Srila Prabhupada's life how he came from Siddha Bhajan, he came from his Bhajan to come to the West and spread this Krishna consciousness. So now I'm sitting here, I'm a Malecha in front of all you pious Vaishnavas, and but by his touch, he touched the lives of so many thousands of people by his paradukha dukhi. And everyone knows the story of Prabhupada when he was in a car. Gurudas turned around to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I'm sitting in a car with you, very nice car. I'm with the pure devotee of the Lord. And I look out the window and there's so much suffering. So sometimes, Prabhupada, I want to cry when I see this suffering. So Prabhupada turned around and said, only sometimes, Gurudas, only sometimes. So this is the heart of the Vaishnava, that he's just simply wanting to give this Krishna prema, this love of Krishna, this opportunity for the conditioned souls to get Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. So this should be our mood. This isn't just philosophy for entertainment. This is philosophy for abhideya, for application. Sambandha, abhideya, prayojana. So this sambandha we read is something we have to apply in our lives. So what are we doing right now to spread and to help them spreading of this Krishna consciousness movement? If we analyze in our own lives right now, what are we doing? So we're being trained. Some of the devotees here are being trained. Some are preaching. Some are educating themselves or educating others. And educating others or educating themselves. But this mood of giving Krishna consciousness to others is the principle of all our activities. And Radhanath Maharaj, when I was here a couple of years ago, said something very nice, because I said I do a little book distribution. So he said, the emphasis here in this temple is not book distribution. The emphasis in this temple is not deity worship. The emphasis in this temple is not prasadam distribution. And I was thinking, what's the emphasis? And he said, the emphasis in this temple is the devotees. So paradukha dukhi. Because without the devotees, you can't do anything. If the devotees are happy, if the devotees are looked after, if the devotees are actually increasing their devotional sentiments, if the devotees are becoming purified, then everything goes on. This is not a book distribution temple. Chaupati is not known as a book distribution temple. But where did you come last year in the marathon? Second. And the year before? And this year? Anyway, whatever. But the emphasis is on when you look after the devotees, everything else blossoms. The book distribution blossoms, the deity worship blossoms, the Vaishnavas' faces blossom, and the heart blossoms. So the emphasis actually is on us. It's actually not on Radhanath Maharaj or Srila Prabhupada or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati or Gorkashodas Babaji Maharaj or Bhaktivinoda Thakur or old Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The emphasis is actually on us to purify our own hearts. So we have to become very diligent to purify our own hearts. So this science of self-realization, yes, everything is Prabhupada Kripa, but we have to become sadhakas. We have to become strict in our chanting. We have to become strict in our association. We have to become strict within our mind. So we have to analyze ourselves. It says in Bhagavad Gita that the guru engages a disciple according to his psychophysical nature. So we have to become aware of where we're at. We have to become conscious, as Prabhupada said, before we become Krishna conscious. So we have to become conscious of our strengths, our weaknesses. We have strengths, we have weaknesses, and we have to help others, just like we have this very nice counseling system here, where the devotees will help each other. So we can see within our own hearts and mind we have strengths and we have weaknesses. Most devotees have very strong areas. So one of the strongest areas, does anyone know one of the most strongest areas for devotees? Taking prasadam. Very strong. And then we have our weak side, which is doing service and chanting Hare Krishna and associating nicely with the Vaishnavas. I'm joking, but we can understand that unless we actually work on our own heart, we can't expect everyone else. It's a nice story. One Indian gentleman came to Prabhupada. An Indian gentleman said, "Guruji, give me your mercy." So Prabhupada said, "It is up to you to take." And Vishnujan Maharaj actually said to Prabhupada, "You're so merciful to me. How is it you're so merciful to me?" And Prabhupada turned around and said, you take the mercy. That's the only difference. So this desire to take the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to take the mercy of the holy name, to take the mercy of the association of devotees, to take the mercy of analyzing how to improve our devotional service, this is actually the taking the mercy. We have to be selfish. This is where selfishness and selflessness meet. To be really selfish means we become loyam, we become greedy for the holy name, we become greedy for the association of devotees, we become greedy to please the guru, we become greedy to please the Vaishnavas, we become greedy to distribute books, we become greedy to chant, to have bhajan, we become greedy to take prasadam. We become greedy for Krishna's mercy. So in that way, we have self-responsibility that we have to take our own lives in our own hands and really take the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This loving exchange, giving and receiving love, it's not one way. It's not, I'm giving. We have to receive. We have to receive the holy name. We have to receive presents from the Vaishnavas. We don't reject, say, no, we accept. And we offer back. So this revealing a mind in confidence and speaking confidentially. These are loving exchanges, giving and taking prasadam. So we have to be greedy to take, and then we'll have something to give. If we don't have anything to give, we don't have anything, we can't give anything. Has anyone ever been on Sangatan and they felt completely fried and completely unenthused? How can you give? Yeah, I've been many times. How can you give unless you're actually, what's his name? Tripurari asked Prabhupada. Prabhupada asked Tripurari what the method was. No, Tripurari asked Prabhupada what the method was for Sangatan. So they had a discussion, and Tripurari Maharaj, he mentioned that book distribution is when you become so full of Krishna consciousness that it spills out to others, that you just, you're so full yourself that it spills out to others. You just naturally, and it's stated in the Shastras, that the nature of the guru is he'll give. The nature of the guru, he'll just give. You just have to take. Because they're overspilling with Krishna consciousness. They're so enthused, they're so enlivened by Krishna consciousness that they just naturally give. So this paradukha-dukhi is not an artificial state, it's a natural state. So then we have to become, there's a nice lecture, devotees here probably know it much better than I do, Bhaktisiddhanta is talking about himself on his Vyasa Puja, and he was saying, I am completely unqualified, but it is Lord Chaitanya's order, become guru. So this is a nature. Guru doesn't mean to say you sit on the Vyasa stand and you just tell everyone what to do. Guru is giving. He is giving Krishna consciousness to everyone. And this is this paradukha-dukhi. So the duty is for all of us is to become guru. Any of us, whatever our background, whatever our situation, we have to become guru. And what does guru mean? Not to become the boss, but to give Krishna consciousness to everyone. Become everyone's servant. Srila Prabhupada was giving one lecture. And he was giving lecture on Vanashram, and it was in Switzerland. So the people were, actually I'm not sure, it's in Europe somewhere. The people were a little bit envious. So one man stood at the end, he said, you're talking about first class, Brahman, second class, Kshatriya, third class, Vaishya, fourth class, Sudra. So I can see by the way you're talking, you will think you are Brahman, you think you are first class. So Prabhupada turned around. I didn't mean to point it. So you thinking you're first class, so Prabhupada said, I am the servant of everyone. So this is Vaishnav. It's not a small thing to become a Vaishnava. To feel in your heart, actually feel in your heart that you're the servant of everyone, that you're just here to give everyone. There's so many materialists, they have that mood, some of them, to give, but they don't know what to give. What do you give? You give counseling, you tell everyone, yeah, it's okay, you'll be all right. But they don't have anything positive to offer. There's so many welfare movements, but we have the one thing that no other welfare movement, no other charity, no other world federation of, you know, global peace. We have one thing that none of them have. And everyone knows who's sitting here. We have the absolute, purnam, complete truth. We have Shri Krishna Bhagavan, the fountainhead, Sarva Karana Karanam, Govindam Adi Pusham Tambahamajam, Eti Tila Kalapamsa, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. We have knowledge of him. We don't have him yet, but we have that knowledge. We have him to give to everyone. It's like if we have the cure for AIDS and we kept it to ourselves, then the whole world would kill us. You have the cure. Millions of people are dying from this disease, and you have the cure, and you're not sharing it. So we don't have the AIDS cure, we don't have the swine flu cure, we don't have the cholera cure. We have the cure for every single disease on the planet, and we don't want to share that. We don't want to give that. There's something. Must be very wrong if we don't want to share that. So this paradukha-dukhi is the essence of a Vaishnava. So whatever situation we have in our in our lives, then we have this as an ultimate goal that we're trying to help others. So there's a nice letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote back to Rameshwar Prabhu when he wrote, he was a BBT. He's back now in New York. You've met him? No. We were going to go and fly there actually just to meet him. But anyway, we didn't. But so he wrote this nice letter to Prabhupada saying, Srila Prabhupada, we've distributed so many Bhagavad Gita's in English. I don't know how many. The total was 60 million of all books in all languages. We've done so many Bhagavad Gita's in English language. We've done so many in French. We've done so many. And then he lists, and we've done so many in English in Srimad Bhagavatam, so many Chaitanya Charitamritas, listed all the books, all the different languages, a huge report. And then he said, all by your grace, Srila Prabhupada. So he sent this letter to Prabhupada, thinking Prabhupada would be very pleased. And of course he was very pleased. So then the letter came back. It is very nice that you have distributed some, and he wrote the whole thing back, you know, every detail of every achievement that the devotees have done. And Prabhupada said, you know, without you Western boys, I couldn't have done this. Excuse me, I'm getting old. Without you Western boys, I couldn't have done this. So he wrote back and he listed everything that was written. And then he said at the end, but higher than all this, save yourself. So Prabhupada's emphasis in that letter to that particular devotee was to say, so this is our situation. We're preaching, but the highest preaching, boil down the milk, is actually to look after ourselves. Because without looking after ourselves, how much preaching can you do? If you're drinking in some gutter somewhere in London or New York or wherever, who can you help? So first, our first priority is actually to look after ourselves, and then our second priority is to preach this paraduka duki. So there's a very nice balance we have to find in our own lives. We maintain our spiritual health, and with our health, then we can help others. And we can help others, because we've been given that knowledge. And Srila Prabhupada said, of course, health first, sadhana second, and preaching third, service third, he said. So this is what we have to understand ourselves, that without health, we can't do our sadhana. Without sadhana, we'll have no enthusiasm to serve. So these things we will have to keep in mind when we're in our lives. So I wanted to ask, I know it's early, but I've run out of things to say. No, I could go on and on and on. I don't want to bore you too long. But anyone, any questions at this point or comments from the Vaishnavas? Even if anyone wants to play the devil's advocate, then they're very welcome. Keeps everyone awake, questions and answers as well. So, does anyone have any questions or comments? Everyone is self-realized. On the topic of book distribution, again, Srila Prabhupada spoke once to Bhavananda Prabhu about how he didn't want to come here one day. He didn't want to come into this world. But Krishna asked him to come. And Krishna told Prabhupada, just write those books. I will take care of everything. Just write those books. So Prabhupada came with this mission to distribute Srila Prabhupada, to distribute these books, to translate and to have these books distributed. He also mentioned on another occasion that he came with another, he had another goal, which was to defeat the atheistic scientists. So he put a lot of emphasis on defeating these materialistic scientists. So the materialistic scientists are very envious, actually, of Krishna. So they put forward this philosophy that everything comes from chemicals. So Prabhupada was very determined and very enthusiastic to defeat these, as he said, so-called scientists, these rascals. So their fundamental philosophy is based on the fact that they believe everything comes presently right now from a big bang, from a huge colossal explosion that took place. So if you ask them, where did this explosion take place? Just like a person who is walking down the road. Say if we were walking down the road today and there was this huge explosion in the Taj Mahal. No, the Taj Hotel. Was it the hotel? Yeah. So that explosion took place and someone's walking down the road in this explosion. So a person would say, oh, it just happened. And they just carry on walking. Just happened. No, no one would do that. The police are informed, the anti-bomb disarmament force and whatever you have here in India. I don't know what they have in Britain or anywhere, but they'd have some investigation at least, like, how did it happen? You know? No one would. I mean, it was world news. You know, the Twin Towers is world news. And, you know, but the bombing here, is everyone knew in the whole world what happened. But would everyone just walk past and just ignore it? Oh, it just happened. No. Someone put a bomb there. Someone arranged it. Someone shot people. They did so much investigation about how did this happen. But the scientists, who are supposed to be the most analytical and searching for the truth, their explanation of this huge explosion, not just the hotel in Bombay, but the explosion of the whole, which created the entire universe, actually not the entire universe, all the universes happened by a Big Bang, according to their theory. But not one of them has asked, how did it happen? You ask them, how did it happen? They say, it just happened. It did, it just happened. But you're a scientist. How did it happen? Not even scientifically, but just logically, how did it happen? It just happened. No. You know, when something explodes, there's chemicals and, you know, something happens. So how did it? It just happened. And this is like 1859, Origin of the Species by Darwin. So for the last 150 years, they're just saying, it just happened. So their conclusion, their answer to the whole esoteric, eternal question of how we got here, they turn around and say, it just happened. So this is such a crazy, amazing, and the whole world has been hoodwinked and fooled by this, their euphemisms, their, you know, elite terminology to hide. In fact, there's a nice psychological trick which is described in psychology, where in order to stop people questioning you as an individual, the best way to do that is to become an authority figure. Just go and do this. Chai, cello, give me some tea. You become the authority, and then people don't question your validity. So this is actually what they do. They're such rascals. They present themselves as the authorities, and in that way they can avoid a lot of questioning. The pharmaceutical companies on this planet, pharmaceutical business and arms are the two biggest money spinners on the planet. So the pharmaceutical companies will produce a drug wholly and solely to addict people. There's an equivalent drug which does exactly the same, but it's non-addictive. So they produce the addictive drug. This is known fact. This is just one very small fact. There's all sorts of other things that go on. And what is their motive? It's simply money. There's no paradukaduki. It's simply money. So when the criteria, or the first criteria for all activities, is purely financial feasibility, then the whole world gets completely taken off on a wrong tangent. So as Prabhupada said, for the misdirected civilization, because the first criteria for all activity in the Western world is simply money. So then everything is mad. You know, someone falls off a ladder, they get sued for $2 million. Everything becomes crazy. But it all stems from this conception that we're all just chemicals, that everything came from a Big Bang, a primordial soup, and that we all just evolved. Prabhupada made so many nice points. He said, everyone in the scientific world, and if you analyze all your experience, because you're all educated here, much more than I am, that every single scientific discovery is just an observation of phenomena. They observe that the the mist becomes dissolved when the sunlight comes. Or they observe that the species can adapt only within their own species. There's microgenetics and macrogenetics. They can adapt within their own species, but they can't change. So they observe the world around them. And they say, from that observation, in fact, the theory, I don't know if anyone knows this, but this obviously be devotees, the theory of the Big Bang comes from they observed the universe and they saw that it was expanding. So they extrapolated, another nice word they use, that actually because it's expanding, they must come from a point of infinite density and that exploded into. That's actually where the theory comes from. I mean, there's no evidence. It's just this one observation. And from that, the whole theory came. So what they do, they observe everything, the world around them. But they don't ever look at the cause. They just observe the phenomena. But why are we talking? Why do we have intelligence? Why do you have personality? Why are you good at telling jokes? Why are you, you know, brilliant at maths? Why do you have beauty, you know, fame, intelligence? Why do you have these things? The source of everything must have these qualities, at least to the same extent that we see, but probably more. Philosophically, there has to be. There has to be. But they don't want to look at that. They don't want to see that. So they simply observe the phenomena, but they don't look at the cause. So Prabhupada said this is just like children. They look at something, but they don't realize. And he gives the example, of course, that when he was a child, he thought there was a ghost inside the gramophone record. Or he thought that he could put a stick on top of the tram line, you know, the cables, electrical cables over the tram. He thought he could stick a stick in there and go along. Because there's intelligence, even a child, there's a cause, so they look at the cause. So they're so childish that they don't even look at the cause. They just observe the phenomena, and from that they try and speculate. So this is one of Srila Prabhupada's main concerns, that he wanted these materialistic atheists smashed. And their scientific, so-called scientific philosophies are really very, very shallow. Just like recently we were looking at some intelligent design theory. Everyone's familiar, they've heard probably, that this intelligent design theory has come about by a group of scientists who are not Vaishnav devotees, but they've analyzed the world and they've seen that behind everything there's such an intelligence behind every single activity that they call it the intelligent design theory. That there's an intelligent design behind everything we experience. Just like if you see, they give the example of the rocks, Rushmore, the rocks where the presidents of America are carved out of the rock, huge. You've seen Mount Rushmore. Anyway, one half crazy man, decided to spend most part of his life chiseling these sculptures out of the rock, and the presidents are there, Roosevelt, Lincoln, different people. So for anyone to look at that, which isn't so complex, a single cell amoeba is much more complex than that, to look at that and say it happened by chance, which is their theory, is completely, again, ridiculous. Someone's obviously carved it out and made it. So the more complicated something becomes, the more obvious that there's a designer. So they look at it in that way. And very nicely they've come up with so many examples to show and to actually prove that there must be an intelligent design behind all this. And they actually analyze the flagella, which is a very small element within the cell that does a lot of work. There's 40 parts, and they refer to something called irreducible complexity, that if it doesn't have its 40 parts, if it has 39 or 38 or 32, it doesn't work. It has to have these 40 parts, it has to work, and it has an outboard motor, an antennae that whizzes around, and it can stop on it rotates at 1,000 RPA, and I don't know the figures, but and it's able to stop. And it's so incredible, it's a motor, it's a little tiny motor. So Darwin's theory is that everything was moves by very small fragmental changes from by every single change has to produce a functional advantage. And by small steps over a very long period of time, it changes into something else. So the problem with the flagella, or even the eye, to give a very easy example, is the eye is a very, very complex mechanism. So for that to have gone from a glob of something and to move to a very complicated functioning eye, those small steps that has to have happened, according to Darwinism, each step has to show a functional advantage, has to show some. But until you get the eye, you have nothing. So there's no functional advantage at all until you actually get the eye. So this theory is completely... It works very well within a species, some adaptation within a species. They give the example of a finch, how a finch is able to... finch with a bigger beak is able to get to the seeds from the previous year and survive, where the finch has a smaller beak. If it's a bad year and there's no fresh berries and fruits on the tree, it has to go to these hard seeds. So the finch with a larger beak is able to get to that food source, where the finch with a smaller beak. So it works very well in a limited area, but for changing a species, and of course everyone's familiar, the Darwin's theory is called the missing link theory, which is another hilarious thing. It's the whole philosophy is missing. The missing link. You know, the link that they're talking about between the different species, which is going to illustrate how all the species evolved, the whole crux of the whole philosophy is missing. So if you, I give anyone £1 million, because I'm English, pounds, if they are prepared to jump in to a bull ring. Say in Spain they have these bull rings, you know, with a bull. So I give everyone £1 million. If I haven't got £1 million, actually, I'm lying. But I would give everyone £1 million if they would jump into a bull ring, and we will tie up just one, not even two or three, just one bull, and we'll tie up that bull with a chain that will not be able to go anywhere near him. He just has to stand there. And the chain is shorter than where he is, so he won't be touched by the bull if the chain's that short. But the one thing is, the chain has to be full of missing links. So it's a crazy philosophy. The link's missing, and there's no fossil evidence to prove the link's there. In fact, there's so much fossil evidence to prove that it's not there. But everyone is... So Srila Prabhupada, Paraduka Duki, he came to give this knowledge. One of the main things was to prove the insanity. And Prabhupada used to get angry because... And one time, Govinda Devi Dasi, she tells a story. Prabhupada, why do you get so angry when it comes to these things? So Prabhupada gave a very nice example. He said, you see this picture here? Maybe we have a nice picture here. So Prabhupada said, I know the artist of this picture. So if you say this picture happened by chance, I become very upset because I know the artist and he's done a beautiful picture and you're saying, he didn't do it. He did do it. Here's my friend, he's done it. So in that way, Krishna was his friend and is everyone's friend. Sarva Bhutanam. So when people say the world is created by chance, Prabhupada got very angry because he loves Krishna, he loves his friend, and you're saying he didn't do it. It just happened by chance. So he became like fire. So in that way, Paraduka Duki, he was in love with Krishna and he wanted to give this Krishna consciousness. And anyone was against, he'd tolerate. Prabhupada was the most tolerant, but you can see sometimes he got angry with these people because they were telling him that Krishna didn't do these things. So nice. So it's definitely time for questions now. 9:25. So anyone have any questions or comments or corrections or criticisms? No, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. ISKCON Guru Vrinda ki jai.